Lovely to see you all. So, yeah, this is fun. I've not given a talk for a while, actually, so there was a little bit of nervousness when I was preparing to come here and what I might say. But something I have a lot of confidence in is actually what I'm going to be talking about, which is about family life as a context for practice. So, not so much about, well, how do you still get off and go and meditate or go to your study group or get on retreat, which everyone has to work out how they do that in their own way. But it's about how you use the context of parenting or whatever intense family relationships or living relationships in your life as the practice ground for developing integration, metta, and insight. So I'll just say a little bit about my context. I think Matty's already told you a little bit, just before I launch into a bit more about the topic. So I first became a Buddhist when I was 19. And I've been practicing consistently within Tri Ratna since 2003, when I was about 23. And that's all been in the context of Brighton Buddhist Centre. That's where I live. And, yeah, I became a Mitra in 2005. And that's the same year that I got married to my husband, John. We met when I was 20. And we had our son, Benji, a couple of years after that. No, 2009 we had him. So I had about 6 years of very sort of full-on involvement in Tri Ratna before I had Benji and became a parent. And then I was ordained when he was about, he'd just turned five, when Benji had just turned five. So that's just to kind of give you a little sort of sketch of my involvement and how that's gone alongside my practice as a parent. So, in a very early Buddhist text, the Buddha in the Karaniya Metta Sutta refers to the relationship between a mother and her child as an image of how strong love can be. So, I'm paraphrasing slightly, and obviously we don't know exactly what the Buddha said anyway. And it certainly wouldn't have been in English. But it was something like, just as a mother cherishes her child, perhaps risking her life, so develop an unlimited heart of love for all life. And in that one line, there's an image there of that strength of love that a parent feels towards their child, which is unimaginably strong at times. And also, it's an image of the path of how to practice with that, which is not to channel that love exclusively to our nearest and dearest, but to broaden it out, inspired by the experience of how strong love can be, and to aspire to feel that intensity of love towards all beings all of the time. And it's that last bit as well, all the time. That wasn't in the sutta, but it leads to the obvious but also poignant point that we don't love even our children all the time. Sometimes we're reacting and coming from a place of me and mine and wanting them to do things in a certain way in order to make us happy, and feeling irritated and frustrated. And that is part of why I've found practicing in family life, particularly parenting, is a really good practice ground for integration, because there's this full range of emotions, from the sublime, strong love to the raw, messy anger, frustration, the opposite of love. And it's all there. And so you're not going to kid yourself that you're somewhere that you're not with your practice. And I think that's really helpful. And because the emotions are really strongly engaged, energy is available to meet the challenges as well. So it's often been said that we need to find a way for the emotions to be engaged in a spiritual life. And another way of looking at that is, well, find where your emotions are engaged and make that your practice. So if family life is where your emotions are really engaged, well, practice in that context. Sure, you know, not that we don't still meditate and do other things to support our practice, but make that the practice. And, when Benji was a baby, just coming back to that sort of strength of love that I was talking about from the Metta Sutta, it was such a strong experience of love, that both of delighting in every tiny little thing that he might do, and also the willingness to give up so much for his well-being. The sleep deprivation, just about anything really, is like all for his welfare. And it's that intensity that was incapable of feeling anger towards him, actually, whatever he did. It was also a time, talking about when he was a baby, when I've been talking a bit about making the family life the practice. And I'm speaking not just of parenting, but obviously that's sort of specifically what I'm talking about here. But hopefully it applies to other sorts of family or living together relationships too. But when Benji was a baby, that was a time when the practice of integration, metta, mindfulness became woven into the fabric of daily life, of everything I was doing. So nursing him, rocking him to sleep, holding him while he cried, delighting in his little vocalizations, chanting him mantras, all of what I was doing with him, together with him, that became the practice, and so the kind of the line between formal and informal practice, if you like, very much stopped being there in my practice. And I think that was really helpful. And the other thing, which I've alluded to a little bit already, was that as well as this intense experience of love, it was also a time in his early years when I was very sleep deprived and in this sort of half asleep consciousness, dreaminess of the night, experiencing a raw experience of hatred that I hadn't experienced before. It wasn't directed towards my child, but it was really, it was a really pure kind of shocking experience of the hatred and violence that was possible in this being to arise. And that was quite a wake-up call, actually, to realise and understand more about how greed, hatred and delusion arise in my experience. And when we realise that we're asleep, that's part of the path to waking up. I use this image, those of you who read the blurb for this evening, of wake up, mummy, the potential for liberation in family life. So just as I am often woken from sleep by the call of mummy, whether it's an itchy foot or cramp in the leg or something's not quite right, or maybe it's actually the morning, even though I'm not quite ready for that to have happened yet. Just as that happens, so am I also constantly given opportunities to wake up to the tendency of the mind to fix ideas and want to control things in the challenges of family life. A child is very much a mirror to whatever it is that that I'm doing in my mind or my actions. So I'll give an example just to sort of about, you know, the kinds of things that can happen that can illustrate things and show us what's going on. And it's one of those ones that is quite funny in retrospect, even though it wasn't actually that funny at the time, but it was funny quite soon afterwards, and it happened quite recently. So it's good, you know, I've talked a bit about when he was a baby, but to sort of bring it up to date a bit more, because he's 8 now, which is quite a different phase of parenting and childhood. And so it was a Sunday morning and we were having a chilled out time at home, and he's lazing around in his pyjamas, which he loves to do on a Sunday, and then he decides he wants to go in the garden and play football. And I say, well, it's fine to go in the garden and play football, but you need to get dressed to do that. And we don't play in the garden in our pyjamas. And he's extremely indignant about this and insistent that he's going to go in the garden and play football in his pyjamas. And so there's a bit of a power battle that started here. And I'm trying to take control of the situation. So I lock the back door and say, you know, the door is locked. When you're dressed, you can go in the garden. And he then goes off, so I think, okay, I'm just going to go and get dressed now. I think he's gone into his room to get dressed, and I carry on doing a bit of washing up or whatever I'm doing. And a few minutes later, I get a little bit of a surprise because he's climbed out of the window and is now smirking at me, football in hand, because he's the one, he's taken control here, and he's out there, and he's in the garden, and he's playing football, and he looks extremely pleased with himself. So this is a really good example of being mirrored back. You want to control everything. You can't control everything. This person will not be controlled. So Okay, well, I should probably tell you what I did next briefly, because you might be interested to finish the story. I actually went into a different room to calm myself, because that's one of the things that I try and practice, both to model to him, but also it's, any of you who've been practicing for a while know that it's about finding the gap when you start reacting, to create a space to be able to notice whatever's going on. So in my case, I went into the other room and noticed, power dynamic, wanting control, feeling frustrated, and just taking a moment to feel calm before I took my next step. And in a couple of minutes after that, there was a knock at the door. Because, of course, the back door was locked, if you remember. So now he's in the garden with no audience to sort of witness what he's done. And he wants to come back in again. So I went to the back door, and immediately I open it. He says, sorry, comes in and gets dressed. So that's also an example, and it doesn't always work. But sometimes, actually, when we back off and we let go and we stop trying to control everything, the situation can resolve itself in a way that we might not have thought was possible a few minutes beforehand. So, I don't want to talk too long, but I will say a little bit more. So I think I want to say a little bit more about, if you're making parenting or some other intense situation in your life, the practice. Well, what does that mean? Okay, so I've talked a bit about integration, metta, and insight, because that's kind of my way of talking about the system of practice, which many of you will be familiar with in Sri Ratna. And another model is the three Lakshanas. And I just thought I'd say a little bit under each of those. Don't worry if you're not familiar with any of these frameworks. You can always go away and find out more about them later if you're interested. In terms of insubstantiality, there's a lot. There's so much I could say about any of these topics, actually, in relation to how I practice as a parent. But there's a lot of the way we can notice and open to the ungraspable, mysterious, unfolding being that we love. And one of the ways that I've always loved to do this throughout the years of parenting is through watching my child play. And I was on holiday recently, and the highlight of the holiday was going to the beach, partly because I can't get onto a beach very often, which that's a different topic in itself. Being in a wheelchair, you could probably imagine. But watching my child go into his imaginal world with the sand and the stones and chatting away, making a special type of sand that nobody would have ever heard of because it had its own special name. And he was carefully creating this special sand to build this road, and just watching that and delighting in that without trying to sort of fix him in any way. In the world of play, we go beyond the kind of utilitarian way of looking at things that we often get locked into. Linked to that, all the three Lakshanas are interconnected and interwoven. Is the opportunities to notice over and over again and start to really perceive and see more clearly the ways we turn the being that we love, in our minds this is, into an object that needs to be a certain way and do certain things in order to make us happy. And it's a very humbling process to continually, the number of times I've got angry with my husband or my child because they didn't do what I wanted them to do. And the more clearly we can see that and keep letting go of that, I mean, that's basically dukkha. That's when we're objectifying people and things, expecting them to be a certain way, and they're not, and so we suffer. And just continually letting that go. Letting go to what's actually happening. Opening to the being that is here in us, in them, and to the love that is possible when we stop trying to make things be a certain way. And there's a paradox in here. Any of you who are in these kinds of situations might be thinking, but yeah, you need the boundaries though. You can't just let go of the boundaries and have chaos and not have rules, because that doesn't work. So there is also something about holding the paradoxes. And one of the things in, say for example, bringing up Benji, I'm very, very sensitive to conditions and trying to create the very best conditions all the time to help us, support us as a family, to help him to grow and to thrive. And anyone that knows me, as Singamati does, will know that I go to great lengths to kind of do things in quite specific ways that, you know, it might be easier not to, but because I really care and I really feel that this is what's important. So it's kind of going to all these lengths to create supportive conditions whilst being aware of the futility of trying to control it all. Which was illustrated in that example I gave you earlier. And I think as time's gone on, and I'm learning as I go along as a parent, and I often need to find and develop specific parenting skills to help me to put into practice the values that I have as a Buddhist, which is a really creative process, actually. And yeah, something that I've come to realise is that the boundaries, they need to be as strong as iron and as ready to dissolve as sandcastles surrendering to the tide when they're not appropriate anymore. And I usually find out they're not working anymore because I'm trying to hold them in place. And it's not what's needed. It might have been what was really working great, but it's not what's needed anymore. So these are some of the ways that I work with using parenting as a practice for context. And ultimately, coming back to what the Buddha said that I quoted, roughly speaking, hopefully, at the beginning. The nature of love is boundless. So the more we deepen our love within the context of the relationships that we're in, the more that naturally opens out to all life. There isn't, you know, it's when we're doing the sort of closing down of me and mine and making everything small that love can feel specific and confined to particular individuals. The more we deepen into love that is boundless, the more that love is for all beings, and that is for me the heart of my Buddhist practice. It's the heart of what was there in the Metta Sutta, that quote that I use. And I think practicing in family context, that's one of the sort of key things that flows through my practice as a parent. So I'm going to stop talking now. Firstly, I'd just like to let you have a couple of moments in quiet, and then I'm going to drop in a few questions to reflect yourself on some of the things I've been talking about. And after that, I'll invite you to have a chat with a couple of people about your responses. So firstly, I'd just like to invite you to bring to mind an experience of love towards another being. So it could be a family member, and that might be a child if you have children, or it could be a parent or sibling, but it could also be a friend or partner or someone else that you live with, or an animal. It could be a meditation. It doesn't really matter. But just inviting to come to mind an experience of love that you remember, that stands out in your memory, for being particularly strong. Maybe there was an intensity of appreciation or delighting in, or a desire to protect. Maybe a willingness to go beyond personal preferences. Just whatever comes to mind. Dwelling in that memory and noticing how it feels. Maybe noticing the qualities of love in that experience that you're remembering. How do we cultivate an unlimited heart of love? So next, I'd like to invite you to bring to mind an experience of anger or hatred towards another being. It could be a family dynamic, or kind of negative, uncensored reactivity, negativity, just any experience like that we can bring to mind. And acknowledging that, noticing if there's any tendency to judge or criticize ourselves for having those feelings or reactions. And trying to just put that to one side. Now, how do we use this raw material How do we work creatively with the negative reactions that can appear strongly in close relationships? When the guards are down, when we're not censoring ourselves. How do we work creatively with all that? So that's the second question. And finally, just an invitation to bring to mind a particular relationship or family situation in your life that is or could potentially become a context which you could consciously use as a practice ground for the development of integration, metta and insight. So it could be a family relationship with a parent, sibling, child, partner. Or it could be another, it could be any context in which your emotions are engaged in your life. And you're thinking that either it is, or maybe it could become more of a context where you could be consciously practicing integration, metta, and insight. So, how can we engage in that context in a way that uses the opportunity for growth and letting go towards liberation? So when you're ready, I don't know if maybe getting into pairs, or it could be a three or four, whatever, doesn't really matter to be honest, but sort of getting into small groupings, fairly small I think would be probably better, and giving each other a chance to share some of your responses, either to those specific questions or just to the talk in general, and listening, really listening to each other. Sometimes it can be tempting, especially if someone's really grappling with a question, that we sort of feel we need to answer their question for them and give them lots of advice and suggestions. And I just encourage you to really listen to each other and help each other to feel witnessed in whatever it is that we felt brave enough to share, and to just help each other explore a little bit. Obviously we're not going to have a chance to say loads, but just to share and explore a little bit of your responses. Is that okay? Does anyone need me to repeat the question? Yeah. So I'll just give you the short version of the questions. So question one is, how do we cultivate an unlimited heart of love? And that could be in relation to a particular experience you've had of strong love. The second question is, how do we work creatively with the negative reactions that show up in close relationships? And the third question is there a particular relationship in your life that you could use more as a context for developing integration, metta and insight, and how might you go about that? So I've given you a fair bit to go away and talk about. I'm not expecting you to cover it all. Go with what feels most alive and interesting to you.